someone else's journey is our lesson.
We used to say, the difficult we do immediately, the impossible just takes a little more time.
Someone else's lesson is our gift.
I believe part of our responsibility is really to equip and inspire our students to ask those difficult questions.
Be encouraged by the stories that lift us all.
I came to Howard because I wanted to be the President of the United States.
Somebody saw something in me, and it's my duty to be that person for somebody else.
Now, join Dr. Wayne Frederick, President of Howard University, and his guest on The Journey.
She's a solo jazz vocalist and a premier arranger in the jazz choir genre. She leads workshops and masterclasses on jazz singing and improvisation and is the founder and director of the Poised and Polished vocal ensemble Afro Blue. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest today on The Journey is Howard University Associate Professor of Music and Vocal Jazz Coordinator, Ms. Kanatra Miller. How are you?
Hi, hello, Dr. Frederick.
You were raised in Kansas.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that.
It's right in the middle of the country, and my dad was in the military. And so he settled at, he was in Fort Riley, Kansas. Mm-hmm. He settled in Junction City, Kansas, which is right next to that. Okay. That's how I ended up there.
And what was it like growing up in Kansas?
Small town, population of about 14,000. And so, it was really pretty cool. I mean, you know, it's interesting now. I've had an opportunity to live in a lot of different places, bigger cities. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that small hometown city,
right,
the people that really nurture you.
Well, what got your interest in music sparked?
I started playing piano when I was four.
Okay.
So my mother says I was a natural, and I could play by ear, so she gave me piano lessons.
Okay. And then what about the singing?
I discovered that, well, I sang in church choir, but I really got into singing when I got to high school. Mm-hmm. I was the accompanist for the concert choir. And then I got a chance to do some singing as well, and sang in the show choir, and I took voice lessons, and, you know, I did the state music festivals, and all that sorts of things. So I was originally a pianist. That was my main instrument. Somewhere along the line, I can't exactly pinpoint where, maybe I'd say sometime within the last 25 years or so, I kind of changed from being a pianist who sang to a singer who plays piano.
Okay.
So now voice is my main instrument.
I like that. Kansas State University is where you received your education. Tell me about your experience, and obviously growing up in Kansas, I would imagine that was an option, but tell me about making that decision to get into music education and pursue it the way you had.
Well, I originally pursued, I started teaching individual piano lessons when I was in high school. My piano teacher, she got me involved in that. So when I was a junior in high school is when I very first started giving lessons. She had a lot of people who were calling her who wanted lessons. She didn't have time to take all of them. So she helped mentor me. You know, she advised me on what books to use. And, of course, I could read music really well, and I, you know, was at a fairly top level for a high school student. So I started teaching primarily smaller children, you know, ages 5 to, I would say, 10.
Okay.
And so that's how I cut my teeth as a teacher.
Okay.
And I think when I got to college, being a pianist and really understanding reading music, I had a lot of friends who were vocalists who maybe didn't read music as well. So I found myself tutoring a lot of them and helping them with how to learn their music. And education just seemed to be kind of a natural thing I gravitated towards.
So the music education was clearly a good fit. Subsequent to getting both your degrees at Kansas State in music education and then your master's in piano performance, you went on to University of Northern Colorado. What was that like?
Well, that was great because I had already been out teaching in public school for 4 years, and I had taught at both the elementary school levels and the high school level. And I think because my main reason for going back to school is because I had concentrated so much on piano as my main instrument as an undergraduate, and then my master's was in piano performance. I was teaching choir, and I ran into all these situations where the voice was concerned, and I realized I just didn't know enough about the voice. And instrumentalists can be very arrogant when it comes to, you know, how we understand what we do versus how singers do what they do, because, you know, we just have a tendency to have a higher level of theory and the way, and I run into it all the time now that I'm a vocalist. But, you know, I think that I didn't have as much respect for the voice and how to learn to teach voice that I should have when I was an undergraduate. And so faced with the actual issue of teaching voice in high school, and I had, you know, students who had different, you know, situations, and I just didn't know what to do. So I thought, okay, I have to go back to school, and this time I have to choose something that really gears toward the voice so that I can learn what I need to learn to be able to help my students. And then I also took lessons, and I began to take study of voice seriously.
Okay. You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Ms. Kenetra Miller. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. So just to switch gears a bit, Ms. Miller, you then came to Howard University, and also you have founded a jazz ensemble group known as Afro Blue that's now, I would say, world-renowned and certainly performs in an excellent fashion. Tell me first about your journey to Howard University.
I spent 6 years in Australia, and that was, you know, the most amazing experience because I was an American teaching jazz in a foreign country. So they kind of assumed that I knew everything there was to know about jazz, particularly being Black American. They recognized the fact that this is an African American art form. You must know everything. Having, you know, one of the best things about going to university is it teaches you research skills. So the things that I didn't know, I just kind of kept my mouth shut, but I figured them out. You know, so I was in a situation where people expected that I knew a lot, and I had to kind of rise to that bar. So I will say that from a university teaching perspective, I really learned a lot of what I know from that first job, because I got to try a lot of things, make a lot of mistakes, but they didn't know they were mistakes. You know, so I was just like, okay, I won't try that again. Okay, I won't do that again. Oh, this worked really well. So by the time I came back to the U.S., I had figured out, you know, a lot of things. And so I was 1 year in California, and I will say that Dawkins and Fred Irby, they recruited me. You know, so I met them at Jazz Educators Conference, and they had heard about me, and they said, we want you to come to Howard. And so that's how I ended up here.
Excellent. So once you arrived, I'm sure that you heard about the Howard University before, its role in jazz studies, some of its alum. What was your impression once you got here?
Well, I knew that Dr. Dawkins had a vision that he wanted me to do for the vocal program what kind of already existed where the instrumental program was concerned. And so when I first got here, I thought that the singers, you know, we talked earlier about how vocalists aren't often given a lot of respect from instrumentalists. I don't know that they mean to do that. It's just they get kind of frustrated with the lack of knowledge. So that was my first goal, was I wanted to make sure that vocalists were getting the education that they need so that they could be competitive, and that they would also be able to speak the language fluently and not be dependent upon some instrumentalist to interpret what they meant. It gives you more control over your own music and what your vision is. So that was the main thing, was to, you know, really, I guess, to look at where they were, and it's like, I'm going to meet you where you are, and then I'm going to kind of pull you along with me. So it was definitely baby steps, just making small changes, really honing in on increasing their keyboard skills, increasing their ability to read music, and definitely their knowledge of traditional jazz. The students were very much into R&B and soul music and gospel music, and there's a lot of connection between those styles, but jazz is actually the root of all of those styles of music. So I had to, basically, it was fun for me to introduce to them the music that I loved, you know, to introduce them to really understanding the Ella Fitzgeralds and the Sarah Vaughan, who they listened to but not really listened to, you know. So we were able to really discuss in depth what was going on and have them translate that to their music. And then where the ensemble was concerned, to really get them to see the ensemble the way that I saw it, which is as a vocal big band. because I first started my jazz experience playing piano in a big band. So I see the voices, what they're doing, like horns. You know, they're saxophones, they're trumpets, they're trombones. That's the role that they play. We just get to use lyrics as well.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was really a lot of fun.
I know you do. They do a cappella.
Primarily.
Primarily. Tell me how difficult or different that is versus being accompanied by a full, you know, almost a full orchestra. Tell me how different that
is. Well, a cappella, you know, that is really, that really shows the strength and the talent of the individual singers, because there's nowhere to hide. You know, even as a solo vocalist, when there's piano and bass and drums going on, you've got some other instrument providing the tonality and intonation for you. Where in a cappella, everything is being done by the voices. And the ear training that the students receive from singing a cappella is, I mean, it's second to none. It really is priceless. They really grow so much as individual solo performers from their experience singing a cappella.
So when I first came to Howard University, I was once invited to a benefit basketball game in the gym, which was benefiting sickle cell, which I suffer from. And so I went into the gym, and they announced that, you know, someone was going to sing the national anthem. There was no accompanying music. And sure enough, Whitney Houston got up and sang the national anthem before she sang it in the Super Bowl. And that was probably my first true experience of probably intersecting with that tonality and without any type of instrument. I was absolutely impressed. So I can relate from that, from an audience perspective.
Oh, my goodness.
I have looked at the growth of Afro Blue, and one of the things that I note with the current version of the ensemble is the wide variety of what I like to describe as cultures and backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about the current ensemble and a bit of who they are, where they're from, and what makes this work so well.
Well, they're from all over the U.S. I mean, we have someone from Los Angeles, and then we've got students from Atlanta, from Ohio, and, you know, a couple right here in D.C. But I think there's that primarily African-American, there's a way that African-Americans use their voices. A lot of it they kind of grow into from church experiences, but not all the students have church experiences. They're listening to the R&B and the soul music as well. So the way that they use their voices is somewhat similar. And then when they, you know, come to Howard, then we teach them to make sure that they're doing it in a healthy fashion. There's certain techniques that we use, the physiology of the voice, you know, really study of the larynx, just so that they know what it is they're supposed to be doing to keep the voice healthy, as well as maintain their own individual sound. You know, so we don't, you know, want them to become cookie cutters and all sound alike, but there are certain things that we do, like blending of vowels and those things, to get that harmony and that blend so they fit together as one. It's like you take a bunch of different colors, and the way that you arrange them, you know, in a painting is what makes that painting unique. You don't want the color to all be the same.
Absolutely.
Just find a way to put it together. But yeah, they come from all kinds of different, you know, backgrounds. Some of them have had classical voice experience, and so getting them to understand you don't use the voice the same way when you're singing classical music as you do when you're singing jazz. And, you know, some of them come from experiences where they've been involved in pop music. Some have family members who are involved in music, and some are the only ones in their family that are involved in music. So, but they all share that love of wanting to be the best at what they do, and that's what kind of brings them together.
Now, when you think of the future of Afro Blue, what do you see for the future of Afro Blue?
I think Afro Blue kind of will define itself. You know, that I think one of the successes is I strongly believe that Afro Blue is God's group. And so he's going to do with it what he wants to do. And he has honored me to be the one driving the bus. So he's the GPS. So where he says go, that's where we go.
Thanks for being here. My guest today has been Miss Kanetra Miller. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne Frederick on the Howard University Radio Network.